to the Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Micaela, your host.
Welcome to episode 48. Today I'm going to be talking about chapter 8 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Flight of the Fat Lady. And similar to last episode, where I didn't really have any new Wizarding World Harry Potter stuff to discuss, like in terms of news, same as this week. I'm recording them pretty close to each other, so, you know, maybe there's something tomorrow after I'm done with this recording that is going to be in the next episode for like any notable news. But for this episode, I don't. So I can just remind everybody that you can email me at theheiressofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook page is There's a Slytherin Podcast, and Twitter is @SlytherinPod. You can leave a donation and voice message in the Anchor link. And this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And now I can get into a summary of last episode. So last episode, I talked about Chapter 7 of Prisoner of Azkaban, which was the Boggart in the Wardrobe. And this is still the first week of school. And it's later that week, it's a Thursday, that this chapter takes place on. And Malfoy just now has gotten out of the hospital wing. He's totally faking his injury and like the pain and everything. He still feels from it. He says he feels, he really doesn't. And he reveals to Harry that it's partly to mess with him, partly to get Hagrid fired, because now his dad, like Lucius Malfoy, is in on it and trying to get the Ministry of Magic involved, and all this stuff is going on. And he's just milking the injury like to the fullest extent. And he also reveals to Harry that if he was Harry, he would want revenge, like for what Sirius Black did. And Ron's like, oh, he's just messing with you. But Harry can't help but feel like he knows something. And Harry's just out of the loop. And then they have their very first Defense Against the Dark Arts lesson of the year with Lupin. And almost everybody loves the class. There's a Boggart in the wardrobe in the staff room. And they're able to face their fears. Neville in particular does a really great job about it. But Lupin stops Harry from facing the Boggart, and it bothers Harry. Like, it's something that he's definitely thinking about, and he's very bothered by it. And Hermione didn't get to face the Boggart either, but it wasn't because Lupin deliberately stopped her. And Lupin's Boggart is revealed as well. Some of the class, Lavender Brown in particular, thinks that it's a crystal ball that he's most frightened of, but it's actually the full moon because he is a werewolf. And I was talking about last episode how that is just one of the many like clues that helps Hermione figure out that Lupin is a werewolf. But now we can get into chapter 8 of Prisoner of Azkaban, which is Flight of the Fat Lady. So pretty quickly, Defense Against the Dark Arts becomes pretty much everybody's favorite class. Lupin is great at what he does. He's very knowledgeable. He's very practical, hands-on learning. So everyone's really liking it. The only ones who kind of seem to dislike it are Malfoy and his gang of Slytherins. They're the only ones that have anything bad to say about it and anything bad to say about Lupin. Like, no one else has complaints except for Malfoy and the Slytherins. One of the things that Malfoy does say about Lupin, he says, "Look at the state of his robes. He dresses like our old house elf." And that's Dobby. He's talking about Dobby. Dobby is his old house elf. Dobby is like one of my absolute favorite characters of the whole series. And we saw him, we were introduced to him in the second book, this last book. And we don't see him in this third book, but we will see him again in the fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh, which is nice. I really wish we saw more of him in the movies. But again, TV show in a few years. I'm hoping we have way more Dobby, way more house elves. It'll be super cool. But he is referencing his old house self. He's completely talking about Dobby. And it's, remember, Harry freed Dobby. You know, he tricked Lucius Malfoy into giving him a sock, which is how you free a house self. You have to give them clothes. That'll free them. And Dobby is like the only house self in the world who wants to be freed. And he was, so very happy for him. But he is now the Malfoy's old house self because he was freed. He doesn't work for them anymore. So that is who Malfoy is comparing Lupin to, is Dobby. And no one else cares. Like, who cares that his robes are frayed and patched. Like, Malfoy is the only one that seems to be really paying attention to it at all. But they're learning a lot more about creatures, like dangerous creatures, in their dark arts class, which I think is interesting, because you would kind of think maybe Hagrid would teach this. Like, take away the fact that Hagrid's like facing all this grief right now because of the Buckbeak incident with Malfoy, but you would think like maybe the Care of Magical Creatures teacher would be teaching about these magical creatures. However, you're not really caring for them. It's kind of more of some defense. It's defense against the dark arts, right? So it's defense against magical creatures as well that are part of like the dark magic. So it makes sense, but it is interesting. Like, I would have loved to have seen some sort of joint like lesson. I think that would have been cool. Not that Hagrid is 100% qualified to do that. Not saying Lupin is either, but it would have been something interesting for the students if they were to ever do something like that. But some of the creatures they're learning about that are just as interesting as the whole Boggart lesson, they learn about red caps. So those are goblin-like creatures, and they lurk wherever there's bloodshed. So some of the examples given in the books are like dungeons of castles and battlefields. They bludgeon. They literally wait in the shadows to bludgeon those who had gotten lost. So, you know, evil, dark magic, or dark creatures. And then they learn about kappas, and those are water dwellers that look like scaly monkeys, so they have webbed hands, and they like to strangle whoever or whatever wanders into the ponds that they're in. So these are some dangerous creatures, and it'd be so cool too. Like, I really want other Fantastic Beasts, because I would love to see more of these creatures, because I feel like we saw a lot in the first movie, of course. Second movie, not as much. And third movie, not as much either. We saw like the Chillin, which was like the one big character, but it'd be cool to see more of these. So I really hope we get a fourth and a fifth. At least one more would be great. We were supposed to get five total, but you know, we've talked about all that drama that happened with the movies. Either way though, I would be so excited to have Lupin as a teacher. After having Lockhart last year, this is probably so refreshing. Like, they're actually learning, and it's cool and interesting stuff, and it's practical. Like, it's just really good information. Great teacher, great class this year. So along with like the Slytherins, like Malfoy and his friends that don't like Lupin, Snape also does not like Lupin. Word traveled pretty fast about Snape being the Boggart and ending up in Neville's grandma's clothes. So ridiculous. That was the charm that they have to do to repel a Boggart, and it turns into something like ridiculous looking. It takes away that scariness from whatever the Boggart turns into. And in Neville's case, you know, it turned into, it was still Snape, but it was now wearing his grandma's like awful clothes, and it didn't make him look scary anymore. He wasn't scared by him anymore. So that word traveled around school pretty fast, and Snape heard about it, and he is just bullying Neville even worse than before, bullying him like he never has, which is never okay to do ever, to be a bully no matter what age you are, but especially when you're a teacher and you're bullying a student, one as helpless as Neville. Like, no, that is so just terrible. And Snape is also like, anytime Lupin is mentioned or he hears the name Lupin, he just gets even angrier too. It just makes him like terrible. Also, as like the weeks are going on, Harry is starting to really dislike divination. I mean, most students are, except for Pravarti and Lavender. They love it. But everyone else is just kind of bored by it. It's really hot in her room. They're just always looking at random shapes and symbols, and Harry cannot stand that every time Trelawney looks at him, she just like, her eyes just fill with tears, and it's just, he just doesn't like it. But he does realize that a lot of people in the class like do kind of have like some respect for her, especially like Pravarti and Lavender in particular, and they always like have really weird looks on their faces, like annoyingly superior looks, like they wanted to look like they know things that others don't. And whenever they like speak to Harry, they're also like speaking oddly, like in hushed voices. Like, he's just over it. Like, he's not happy with it. He just does not like going to that class and dealing with his classmates being all weird and annoying around him. Also, no one is really liking Care of Magical Creatures. They had a pretty fun first class with the Hippogriffs until Malfoy ruined everything. So now Hagrid has lost all his confidence. He is playing it very safe, and he's teaching a class about how to look after flobberworms. And they have to be some of the most boring creatures ever. Ron in particular is like, why would we want to look after them? Like, in this particular like part of the chapter, they're basically just like trying to feed it lettuce, and Ron just is not a fan of that. No one really is at all. So a little bit of info about flobberworms, these creatures. They're about 10 inches. They are toothless. They're brown, like yellowish looking. They eat vegetation and preferring lettuce. That's why they're feeding them lettuce in this part. They have like a mucus that they like shed, I guess, if that's the word for it. Like the mucus like falls off them or whatever as they're moving, like worming around. And sometimes that mucus is used to thicken potions, you know, some whatever potions acquire it. That's what it's used for sometimes. Another time where flower worms are mentioned is in Goblet of Fire. So this very next book. After Rita Skeeter, she's a reporter, she's an illegal animagus. That's one of the ones I talked about a few episodes ago, where I think it was last episode or two chapters ago, maybe. Anyways, McGonagall is telling them about animagi and how there's only 7 registered ones and like all the rest are illegal. And Rita Skeeter is one of the illegal ones that we learn about. And it turns into a beetle. That's her animagus form. And that's how she's getting all of this like inside information and writing stories about it in the fourth book. And she learns that Hagrid is half giant, and she writes a story about that. And Hagrid just like stays in his class, in his hut, and is away from everybody. Like he doesn't want to be around anybody. And during that time, Rita Skeeter is still like she ends up on campus again, or ends up talking to Malfoy again, basically. And Malfoy says that it was either Crabbe or Goyle. I can't remember which one of his friends he used as a fake example. But he said that one of them got bitten by a flobberworm and like in Hagrid's class, like trying to add to a fake narrative that Hagrid is dangerous and everything. But like they don't have teeth, so that doesn't even make sense. Like anybody could just fact check Malfoy there and, you know, not take his word for the truth because it's false. And another thing about flobberworms that was mentioned on Pottermore website, that is now WizardingWorld.com, that J.K. Rowling, you know, writes and adds information for, Professor Kettleburn, who is the teacher who taught Care of Magical Creatures for years, until this year when he retired, and now Hagrid is teaching in his place. He's a new Care of Magical Creatures teacher. So Kettleburn, who was the previous one, he retired to Hogsmeade when he was done teaching, and apparently he had a bunch of flobberworms at his house in Hogsmeade, and he only has a few like limbs. Like all his other limbs are replaced with wood. It's not specified like which limbs in particular, if he has both arms or no arms or one leg, one arm, whatever it is. But he was physically unable to fight in the Battle of Hogwarts. And he did his part by just throwing up his flobberworms at the Death Eaters, like through his attic skylight as they like flew by or passed by or whatever. That is what he did in the Battle of Hogwarts, and he did it with flobberworms. It probably didn't do anything at all, because what are they going to do except like get mucus on him, you know, on the Death Eaters? Either way, he did that. It was with flobberworms, and that's like the extra information we know about these particular creatures. So October starts. Remember, they start school on September 1st. So they've been in school for a month now, and with October starting, so does Quidditch. I'm actually like super surprised that Oliver Wood, the Gryffindor captain, who is like super into Quidditch and into winning and everything, and always makes them do a bunch of extra practices and stuff. But I'm really surprised that he didn't have them start practices like the first week of school. Wood is a 7th year, so this is literally his last year, his last chance at winning the House Cup, and he really wants to do it. So I'm honestly pretty shocked that he didn't have them start practice a little bit sooner. But October starts, so do their practices. Wood is very adamant about winning the cup, and he tells them, like, this is my last chance. Like, I'll never get another shot at this, so let's do it. Gryffindor hasn't won for 7 years in a row now, but they're the best team in the school. And it's like, so first and second year of Harry's, first and second year, the two previous years, he wasn't able to play at the end. So they got beat, like, at the end. Like, in the first book, Sorcerer's Stone, Harry was passed out for however many days. Chamber of Secrets, Harry, like, there's just issues, right? Actually, Chamber of Secrets, it wasn't, like, a Harry passed out situation, but Quidditch was canceled because the chamber was too dangerous and the school was going to close down. So that's why the second year, no one won the House Cup. Or, like, no one won the Quidditch Cup, I guess I should say, not the House Cup. But Wood is saying that we have the best team in the school, and we get a little summary here in case anybody forgot, like, who was on the team for Gryffindor. So Harry is the seeker, and he's great. They have three superb chasers. So that's Alicia Spinnett, Angelina Johnson, and Katie Bell. Their beaters are Fred and George. And when he mentions, like, we've got this and this and this and a great seeker who has never failed to win us a match, that's Harry. Harry is good. He's an athlete. He's a very good seeker. And so George and Fred, oh, that sounds weird. I feel like I had to say Fred and George. Like, I just never say George and Fred, or I just say Fred and George are the twins. So saying George first felt weird. But they're saying that, Wood, you don't forget about yourself. Like, you're a really good keeper, because Wood is the keeper. So that's the seven people on the team. Remember, seven's a magical number. And one of those examples is seven. That's how many people are on a Quidditch team. So basically he's saying, like, last chance. Ever since Harry joined the team, we should have been able to do it. But for circumstances that were, like, out of our control, we didn't. But this is my last year, so let's do it. And they're all just full of determination. They have practice 3 times a week, and the weather is getting colder, it's raining, the weather is rough right now. But despite the rain, the mud, the wind, whatever weather is thrown at them, they're still determined, and they really want to win. So they're just practicing no matter what. So they're very excited. And one night after practice, when they get back to the common room, they're talking about how the first Hogsmeade weekend is coming up. And everyone's excited. The twins are excited to visit Zonko's. That's the joke shop. They need to stock up on some of their mischievous supplies. And it's going to be at the end of October, Halloween. That's when the Hogsmeade weekend is. Hermione, who is almost always the voice of reason, she tells Harry, like, I'm sure you can go next time. They're going to catch Black soon. He's been sighted once already. And Ron's like, and he's not a fool to try anything in Hogsmeade. Like, go ask McGonagall, Harry. Like, maybe she'll be able to provide permission for you to go. And who knows? We don't even know when the next Hogsmeade weekend will be. So why don't you go and try to ask her? So Harry's like, you know what? I think I will. And Hermione wants to argue, but it's in that moment that Crookshanks leaps onto her lap and he's like carrying a large dead spider that he's about to eat. And of course, this makes Ron very uncomfortable because he hates spiders and he's really not fond of Crookshanks because of all the Scabbers incidents, and there's about to be more. So he is not a fan of Crookshanks and definitely not of spiders. And Hermione is just so enthralled, like, oh, you're so clever, Crookshanks. You caught that all by yourself. And Ron is like, whatever, just keep him over there, that's all. And it, like, Crookshanks is just staring at Ron as he's eating the spider. He knows exactly what he's doing, so I think it's so funny. And Ron's like, yeah, just keep him over there because I've got Scabbers asleep in my bag. Which Ron thinks that Crookshanks hears and understands, and he gets very mad about it, and I'll get into that in about a minute. So again, they're doing their homework. Harry really wants to go to bed, but he still has his homework to do. He needs to complete his star chart, and that's for divination. He has to do his homework, and Ron already finished it while Harry was at Quidditch practice, and he tells him, oh, you can copy mine, like, if you want to. Hermione doesn't say anything, but she disapproves of copying, and they know that, but they also know that Hermione's not gonna say anything. Like, they're copying off of Ron's, like, not off of hers. So she just doesn't really say anything at all. And then, without warning, Crookshanks just pounces onto Ron, like, onto Ron's bag that he's holding. And Ron is just shouting at him, like, it's all caps in the book at this point. He's telling him, get off, you stupid animal. And he's, like, pulling the bag away from Crookshanks and, like, trying to make him let go. But Crookshanks' claws are, like, sunk into the bag and he is holding on. And Hermione is like, no, don't hurt him. And all the shouting, the whole entire common room is watching them right now and watching this fiasco unfold. And Crookshanks is still, like, holding on to it, and Scabbers comes flying out of the top of the bag, and he scurries away really fast because he's scared, and Ron's yelling, like, screaming to catch that cat, because Crookshanks is just zooming after that terrified Scabbers who was trying to hide. So George makes a lunge for Crookshanks and misses, and Scabbers, you just see him, like, scurrying through, like, the floor around all of these legs. No one can catch either of the animals. And then eventually, he just goes underneath, like, a furniture, I guess, or whatever. It's like a chest of drawers, so I guess that's, like, a dresser. That's what I imagine him being, but a chest of drawers, like, I don't know, just a furniture piece. And Crookshanks tries to catch Scabbers, who is now hidden underneath that. And he's, like, swiping underneath with his, like, paw. And Ron and Hermione run over. Hermione grabs Crookshanks, and Ron just, like, throws himself onto his stomach to grab Scabbers, and it takes some time. Like, he has to get him by the tail because Scabbers is terrified and doesn't want to go out. So then he goes to Hermione and he dangles Scabbers in front of her. He's like, he's skin and bone. You keep that cat away from him, because he thinks that Scabbers is terrified and stressed out and losing weight and becoming ill because of Crookshanks. Like, he's scared for his life. And it's true, Scabbers, aka Peter Pettigrew, remember this is his animagus form, he is scared for his life, and probably of Crookshanks because he's a mouse and or a rat, and Crookshanks is a cat. But more so, he's the reason he's losing weight and looking all sickly and ill and everything is because he knows Sirius Black has escaped Azkaban, and he knows that Sirius Black is after him because he's the only one alive. Him and Sirius, Peter and Sirius, are the only ones that know what really happened that night, and they're the only ones who know that Peter was a secret keeper who betrayed Harry's parents, Lily and James, to Voldemort. He was the Death Eater, not Sirius. Like, everyone has it all wrong. And so that's why Scabbers is all skin and bone, because he's terrified that Sirius is coming after him, especially because he's been sighted nearby, like, at Hogsmeade. You know that, like, Scabbers is terrified. So Crookshanks is saying that, like, nothing's wrong with that, Ron. Like, Crookshanks is a cat. Cats chase mice. They chase rats. Like, what do you expect? And Ron is saying, nope, there's something funny about the animal. And he calls it an it. He says, it heard me say that Scabbers was in my bag. Because remember I just said, like, he's like, Scabbers is in my bag. And he's saying that Crookshanks heard that and decided to pounce for him. And yeah, he's all mad, and Ron's like, well, Scabbers was here first, like, as if Hermione would get rid of her new pet. She's not gonna do that. And he is just very mad, and he just stomps upstairs and goes to bed. And the next day, he is still angry with Hermione. Their first class that day is herbology, and they're working on Puffapod. So, and the three of them, the trio, they're working on the same one. So, but Ron is still, like, not speaking to Hermione. And so basically what they're doing, it's the pink pods there. They're taking, like, the beans, I guess, is what they're described as beans, but I guess it's like seeds. They're taking them from that plant and is basically putting into the wooden pail to repot it, is kind of the task I got that they're doing. It's not very descriptive. I think that's what it is. Basically, Puffapods, we don't know much about them. But if you drop the Puffapod beans, then they burst, like, they bloom into a flower if they're dropped. That sounds pretty to me. Like, a pink flower blooming if you drop the beans, the seeds. But basically, Professor Sprout doesn't want that. That's not the point of what they're doing. And, like, Ron actually drops one, and Professor Sprout has to tell him to be careful. So their next class after that is Transfiguration, and here's another little Easter egg not really Easter egg because it's not super hidden, but basically Professor Trelawney, in their first divination lesson, she had told Lavender that the thing that you're dreading will happen on the 16th of October. And Lavender is crying and she's all sad because she just received news that her rabbit died. And she is very upset about it. But Hermione is very skeptical and is the only one that is kind of offering logic right now. So Pravarti is comforting Lavender, like her arm around her, trying to console her. And Seamus and Dean are there too, and they're looking serious. That's how they're described. Like, they look a little concerned. So Pravarti's saying, like, she got a letter from home this morning. It's her rabbit Binky. He's been killed by a fox. And so they're like, oh, sorry, Lavender. And then Lavender says that she should have known because of the day. It's the 16th of October. And she's saying how Trelawney told her, that thing you're dreading, it will happen on the 16th of October. Remember? She was right. And the whole class is gathering around Lavender now. They're all confused. Seamus again looks serious, like he shakes his head all seriously. So he's kind of believing all of this stuff. And so Hermione is like, well, you were dreading Binky being killed by a fox? And Lavender's like, not necessarily a fox, but I was dreading him dying, wasn't I? Like, that's obvious. I was obviously dreading him dying. And Hermione's like, okay, was he an old rabbit? And Lavender's like, no, he was only a baby. And she's crying even more now. So Hermione says, so why would you dread him dying? And so Pravarti just glares at Hermione. And Hermione turns to the rest of the group and announces to look at it logically. She's saying Binky didn't even die today. Lavender just received the news today. And she couldn't have been dreading it because it's been a shock. Like, it's a shock that her baby rabbit has died. And so Ron takes this moment to speak loudly and tells Lavender, don't mind Hermione. She doesn't think other people's pets matter very much. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think she does care. But if we think about, like, the Crookshanks and Scabbers situation, Hermione is trying to think with logic like she always does, and she thinks it's perfectly natural and normal for cats to chase rats and mice, which it is, but Ron isn't seeing it that way. He's like, this is my pet. This is a pet that's been in my family for years. This is a pet that I love very much. Like, he says that he doesn't like Scabbers. He's always like, oh, this useless rat. He's just a hand-me-down pet. But Ron, truly, he does care for Scabbers. He does. He's a pet. You care for your pets. And Hermione cares for her pet. And so she doesn't see anything wrong with Crookshanks acting like a cat, despite her friend having a rat who was in danger around this cat. So, yeah, that doesn't seem like she cares very much there. And then here, in this situation, if someone's just lost their pet, that is sad. Hermione, you know, you said I'm sorry, but now you're questioning and asking all of these questions and trying to come up with reason and logic and everything. And it's like, just let her be sad. Let her grieve. Later on, if you really want to argue the point, go ahead. But Hermione is just so smart and she's clever and everything. But she is a know-it-all. And not that she necessarily really likes being right all the time, but she takes pride in knowing she's right. And sometimes I think with Hermione, a lot of times she'll say things not for the sake of being right, but I think to make others see, like, things from a different point of view and be like, no, this is correct and that's not correct. You're not looking at this with logic. Like, she does it with Luna Lovegood too. But basically, Hermione doesn't, how do I explain Hermione? I think that she just has to say things sometimes and let other people know what she's thinking, not because she wants to be like, oh, I know all this and I'm so smart, but in her brain, she just needs to let people know because she's sure that she's correct about something and it could maybe help someone look at this from a different point of view. Like, she just has to say something. It's kind of hard to articulate what it is I'm trying to say about her. But basically, like, Hermione, she feels like she needs to articulate what she's thinking. And sometimes it's too much. Like, in this instance, like, someone just lost their pet. You don't need to be like, oh, but you couldn't have been expecting this. And all, you know, like her logic that she's providing, but she just doesn't understand why this would be something that someone was dreading if they weren't expecting it, because it's a shock. And it's just another example of how she looks at things with logic, and that's why she doesn't like divination and she doesn't succeed in it, because it's not logical. It's just a bunch of like random, unpredictable, like subjective sort of readings that Trelawney does, and that's what Hermione doesn't like. And so in this instance, she has to try to explain like why this is not logical. Let me explain it with logic. And that's just kind of how Hermione is. She just has to get what she's saying out. And it's just frustrating to people many times. But yeah, I think it's kind of funny how Ron says, like, don't mind Hermione. She doesn't care or think about other people's pets very much. She doesn't think that they matter very much. So, I mean, Hermione, that is what you're showing others. So how can you blame Ron for saying that? Because that is what, you know, that is the attitude she's kind of showing. She could have apologized for Crookshanks and she didn't, because she thinks that there's nothing wrong with what Crookshanks did. So, you know, there's two sides to it, I guess. But the next class that they're in is Transfiguration, and they're waiting for McGonagall to come in, and then she does, and they get through class, and they Hermione and Ron sit on either side of Harry the whole time, because they're not talking to each other the whole class. And so the whole class, Ron is thinking about what he's going to say to Professor McGonagall to ask him for permission to go to Hogsmeade. So before they leave class, she tells them, as you're all in my house, don't forget to hand in your permission forms to me for Hogsmeade before Halloween. If you have no form, you cannot visit the village. Like, don't forget. And so Neville, who always forgets everything and misplaces things, he says that he thinks that he's lost his. But Professor McGonagall is like, nope, don't worry. I already received your form from your grandma. She sent it to me because she seemed to think it was safer. And she was thinking ahead. So good for Neville's grandma for getting that done. And so now Ron's telling Harry, like, ask her now, just go, go. And Hermione's like, oh wait, no, don't do it, because Hermione's, you know, she doesn't think it's safe for Harry to go out. And so Ron's like, no, Harry, just do it. So he waits for the whole class to leave. Then he goes to McGonagall's desk and he's very nervous. I kind of think about this like when you were little and you were nervous to ask your parents if you could go to like your friend's house or if you could go somewhere, you know, because you know there's a chance that they'll say no or whatever. And this is how I think of like Harry right now. He's very nervous about this. So he asks, like, my aunt and uncle forgot to sign my form. They didn't forget. They didn't want to. And so he asks, like, is it okay if, like, you sign or if you give me permission? And she tells him, no, you heard what I said. No form, no visiting the village. That's the rule. And so Harry keeps trying to press the point. He's like, my aunt and uncle, they're muggles. They don't understand about Hogwarts forms and stuff. Like, if you said I could go, I think it would be okay. And McGonagall is like, nope. And she's sticking to her previous statement, like, that the form clearly states you need a permission slip signed from a parent or a guardian. And so she has like an odd expression on her face, and Harry's wondering like if it's pity. It is, but at the same time, like, she knows about Sirius and she's very adamant about the form. And right now it's kind of like, I think it's almost a really good instance for the teachers to be like, oh, this is a good excuse, like, his aunt and uncle didn't sign the form and we don't really want him out in Hogsmeade, you know, making it easier for Sirius Black to get to him. So I think that this is actually like a really good excuse for the teachers. They can be like, oh, your form wasn't signed. Even if it was signed, there's a very good chance, because Sirius Black was recently spotted in Hogsmeade, that they wouldn't want him going anyways. So this is actually pretty convenient for the teachers that Harry didn't get his form signed. So Harry, all upset and defeated, he goes back to the common room, tells Ron and Hermione about what happened. Ron is very upset about it, and he calls McGonagall a bunch of names that makes Hermione mad. And Hermione, she has a, like, all for the best expression on her face, and that just makes Ron even more annoyed. Like, they're annoyed with each other right now. They're not going to want to just spend the whole day at Hogsmeade together without Harry there. So Ron's annoyed by that, and Hermione's like, well, it's all for the best. And everybody in the con room is just so excited. The Gryffindors, like the third years who are going for the first time, they cannot wait for Hogsmeade. Like, there's so many things to see, things to buy, so they're all very excited. So Ron, trying to cheer Harry up, is like, well, there's always the feast, the Halloween feast in the evening. That'll be fun. And Harry's like, yeah, sure. And the feast is always really good. But he knows, like, it's not going to be as good as Hogsmeade. He thinks that the feast would taste a lot better if he was coming to it after a full day in Hogsmeade with everybody else to talk about the day. But, that's not making him feel better. Nothing anybody else says makes him feel better either. Dean Thomas, he says he's pretty good with a quill, so he offers to forge Uncle Vernon's signature on the form. But Harry already told McGonagall that his aunt and uncle didn't sign the form, so, that won't work. McGonagall already knows. Ron suggests an invisibility cloak, but Hermione shuts that down so quick, and she's like, remember, Ron, Dumbledore talked about it at the Welcome Feast, that Dementors can see through invisibility cloaks. Like, he specifically said invisibility cloak to warn Harry, like, hey, don't you go wandering underneath that thing, because no one else has an invisibility cloak. And if they do, which I highly doubt in Hogwarts, they don't have the OG, real-life, hollow relic invisibility cloak that Harry has, like, perfect invisibility. Like, they don't have that. So, they can't use that either. And Ron's like, okay, like, that's fine. Everyone's making such a fuss about Hogsmeade, but I assure you, Harry, it's not all it's cracked up to be. Like, you're not missing out on anything. I mean, the sweet shop, which is Honeydukes, like, maybe you might be missing out on that. Zonko's joke shop is pretty dangerous. It's supposed to be really cool. And the Shrieking Shack is, like, worth a visit. But really, Harry, like, besides that, like, no, you're not missing anything. So, Harry knows that he is missing stuff, though. And Halloween morning, Harry awakes with the rest of the school, goes down to breakfast, but he's feeling thoroughly depressed. But he's doing his best to act normally and not show that he is very bummed about not going. And Hermione and Ron, who both look really, like, upset for Harry because they see the disappointment in his face, they have temporarily forgotten their little fight about Crookshanks and Scabbers. So they're telling him, like, we'll just bring you back so many sweets from Honeydukes, Harry. Like, don't you worry. And Harry tells them, like, don't worry about me. I'll see you later tonight at the feast. Have a good time. So he walks them off to the entrance hall, and Filch is there checking off the names on a list, looking for any trouble. And Malfoy, of course, always where we don't want him to be. He's standing in line with Crabbe and Goyle. He's like, staying here, Potter, scared of passing the Dementors. And you know what? Harry's like, he's not worth my time. Just ignores him. And he walks back up to the Gryffindor Tower. And the fat lady is there, and Harry gives her the Fortuna Major password. Interesting fact here. So this chapter is called The Flight of the Fat Lady. This is one of the last times that we see the fat lady for a few chapters. This is the night that Sirius Black tries to force her to let him into the Gryffindor common room. Sirius is trying to get in to kill Scabbers. And the fat lady does not let him. He doesn't have the password. And she knows it's Sirius Black, so she just doesn't let him through. And he gets angry. He has a bad temper. So Harry's saying Fortuna Major here. This is one of the last moments that the fat lady opens the door for a Gryffindor with a password for a few months, like, or weeks, however long it is, like, following this. The fat lady takes a little sabbatical after this traumatizing incident with Sirius Black that's going to happen on this Halloween night. So Harry goes into the common room. There's a few older students, the ones, like, who the fun has worn off for them at Hogsmeade. They're not interested by it anymore. And I think that's crazy. Like, a chance to go off campus when you're at the boarding school. Yeah, Hogwarts is amazing and beautiful and everything. But a chance to go off campus on Halloween to Hogsmeade and get treats and go to the bar and go see the Shrieking Shack, a haunted place on Halloween. Like, that'd be fun. I love Halloween. My second favorite holiday of all time. I absolutely love, love, love Halloween. And I would love to go to Hogsmeade on Halloween. So, I mean, yeah, I get some of the older students, they're not interested by stuff like that, but I would go to Hogsmeade every single opportunity for every single year that I was at Hogwarts. And of course, along with those no fun older students that don't want to go to Hogsmeade. There are the first and second years who aren't allowed to go to Hogsmeade. Remember, it's the third years. It's their first year that they can go to Hogsmeade. So that's why, like, all the third years are so excited about it, and Harry is so bummed because this would have been his first time. Third years and above are the only ones who are able to go to Hogsmeade. But one of the second years who Harry sees in the common room is Colin Creevy. Colin is so in awe of Harry. He loves Harry. He's inspired by Harry, and he will never miss an opportunity to talk to him. And he's saying, like, oh, you're not going to Hogsmeade, Harry? And he's looking around, like, you can come sit with us if you like him and his little group of friends. And Harry's like, nope, no thanks, because he's not in the mood to have a lot of people just openly staring at his scar on his forehead. He's like, I gotta go to the library, I gotta get some work done. So he has no choice but to turn around and head right out of the common room again. Like, he's like, okay, I'm in here, I told Colin that lie, and now I gotta turn around and go. So he walks through the portrait hole again, and the fat lady is annoyed because Harry was taking a nap, the fat lady was taking a nap when Harry said the Fortuna Major password to get in through the common room. So yeah, she's not happy about it. She's like, what was the point of waking me up? Like, that's your job. You just calm down. You're fine. But Harry is walking towards the library, but on his way there, he really doesn't feel like working. Like, he's just not in the mood. So he turns around, and then he comes face to face with Filch. And Filch had just finished, like, seeing off the last Hogsmeade visitors. And he's all suspicious of Harry walking around. And he asks Harry what he's doing, and Harry says nothing. And it's the truth. Like, Harry's doing nothing. Like, he's just wandering around, like, he's not doing anything. And Filch is like, oh yeah, I don't believe that likely story. Like, why aren't you in Hogsmeade buying all of these things? Like, he's naming these products that are from Zonko's joke shop. That's what he really doesn't like. All of the mischievous, troublemaking products, like the ones that the Weasleys buy. So he's naming those things, like whizzing worms and those types of products. Why aren't you off buying those like the rest of your nasty little friends? Like, why do you say nasty little friends? What is the point of that? That is so, like, what? I'm telling you, some of these adults in Harry Potter are terrible. Snape, of course. Filch is one of them. Filch is awful. Like, what good does he do? I can't think of a single thing off the top of my head. And I can for pretty much every other character. But Filch, I really can't. He's just so miserable and bitter. And hey, I would be too if I was born into a wizarding family, born in the wizarding world, and I had no magic. I was a squib. I get it. I'd be miserable too. But he's taking it out on students and calling them nasty little friends. Like, that's just dramatic. But Harry's used to Filch being rude. So he just shrugs. And Filch just snaps at him, like, just get back to your common room where you belong. And he just stares at Harry until Harry, like, is out of his sight. Like, he's just so extra. But Harry doesn't go back to the common room. He decides to probably go to the Owlery so he can go visit Hedwig, probably feed her a little bit, just spend some time with her. That's his pet. And she's been staying out of trouble, unlike his friends' pets. Remember Ron and Hermione, the Scabbers and Crookshanks. But as he's walking towards the Owlery, like, going along the corridor that will take him there, he hears someone call his name. And he looks, and it's Professor Lupin. He's looking out of his office door, and he's asking, like, what are you doing? Where's Ron and Hermione? And I think it's notable that the sentence is, what are you doing, said Lupin, though in a very different voice from Filch. Because Filch's accusation, like, what are you doing? And Lupin's just like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? Where's Ron and Hermione? Like, Hogsmeade, you know, it's very different from Filch. And it's refreshing. He's not being accused of anything, and no one's making assumptions about him right now, right? Lupin is just calm and chill. So Harry's like, yeah, they're in Hogsmeade, and just casually, and Lupin looks at Harry for a moment. He kind of puts two and two together, like, oh, you didn't get permission, maybe. He's like, oh, you want to just come in for a moment? Like, I've just gotten a delivery of Grindelow for our next lesson. So Grindelows are magical creatures. I'm going to talk a little bit about them because they come up later on. They are these water demons. They are, like, in English folklore, they're found throughout Britain and Ireland, and they're also found, like, in the lake on the grounds of Hogwarts. So that, like, in Scotland is where Hogwarts is, and they're in those lakes. They're these, like, pale green water demons with sharp horns, pointed fangs. They have, like, these spindly little fingers. They show aggression towards humans. Doesn't matter if they're wizards or if they're muggles. And merpeople are the only ones to seem to be able to, like, domesticate them. So they do come up later on throughout this book. So, like, right here, right now, we see them later on in, like, the final exam. They have the Harry and the rest of, like, the Gryffindors and the Defense Against the Dark Arts class in general. They have to, like, wade across a pond that has a Grindelow in it for their final exam. It's in the Triwizard Tournament. They have Harry and the other Triwizard champions. They have to get past Grindelows in the lake during the second task of the tournament. And Fleur Delacour was attacked by them, and she was unable to complete that second task because of it. And we see what they look like in Fantastic Beasts in the first one. Jacob, he sees the Grindelows floating with, like, the glow bugs, and the dog sees in Newt Scamander's case. Remember, he has his case full of magical creatures, and we see the Grindelow in there. In the seventh movie, I think it's the book as well. For sure, Lupin in the book and movie, he asks Harry a question that only Harry would know, because there is a rat among them. I mean, not literally a rat like Peter Pettigrew in Scabrous form, but I mean, like, a tattletale or whatever other word I'm looking for. Because the Death Eaters knew when Harry was being moved from Privet Drive, where his aunt and uncle live, to the Weasleys' house, to a safe house, right? So they know that Harry's being moved that night, and only insiders would have had that information. So Lupin sees Harry, and he like throws him against the wall and asks him, what creature was in my office the first time Harry Potter came to visit me at Hogwarts, or came to see me, or was in my office, or however he words it? And it was Grindelow, and Harry answers, Grindelow. So that is in the movie. In the book, Lupin also does ask him a question only Harry would know, and I don't see why the movie would change the question he asks. They changed some random stuff, though, so who knows? But in the movie, for sure, he does ask, what creature was in my office, and it was a Grindelow. And this is the moment he's talking about, because, like, this is such a random little small fact. Like, it's very unlikely that anyone besides Harry would know the answer to this question, that it's a Grindelow. So how I described it with those spindly fingers, or spindly, I don't know what that word, how to pronounce it, but it's just, like, super long fingers that are actually very brittle, so you just have to break its grip. That's, like, the key with these Grindelows. And Lupin is thinking that the class really won't have much trouble with it after the Kappas that they faced a few weeks ago. So Lupin asks Harry, like, do you want a cup of tea? And Harry just awkwardly is like, okay, yeah, sure, all right, I'll have a cup of tea. And so Lupin uses magic to make one. Always super cool using magic. You just tap the kettle with the wand and a blast of steam will come out of the spout. And so Lupin says, I've only got tea bags, I'm afraid, but I assume you've had enough of tea leaves. And so Harry asks him, how do you know about that? And Lupin says, McGonagall told me. Like, you're not worried, are you? And Harry says no. And he thinks for a second about telling Lupin about the dog that he saw in Magnolia Crescent, and about how that dog was on the cover of Death Omens, that book in Flourish and Blots. But he decides not to tell Lupin about it because he doesn't want Lupin to think he's a coward, especially after the Boggart incident, that he didn't let him fight the Boggart, right? So Harry doesn't want to bring up the dog, and he doesn't want to look like a coward or weak in front of him. So when Lupin asks, is anything worrying you, Harry? Harry says no at first, but then he's like, you know what? Actually, yeah. You know that day we fought the Boggart? Why didn't you let me fight it? And so Lupin is surprised. He sounds surprised. And he's like, oh, I thought that would have been obvious. And Harry is like, it's not obvious to me. Why? Like, why didn't you let me fight it? He doesn't say, like, it's not obvious to me. He just says, why? But Harry is confused. Like, why didn't you let me fight it? It's not obvious to me. Like, I've done some things that, like, people didn't think I was capable of before. Like, you're talking to Harry Potter here. I mean, like, he's not thinking all that. But I'm just saying, like, this is a question that Harry's wondering. Why couldn't I fight this Boggart in your mind? Like, why did you stop me? And so Lupin says, I assume that if the Boggart faced you, it would assume the shape of Lord Voldemort. And Harry did not expect this answer at all. This is the last thing he would have expected Lupin to say. He doesn't know what he was expecting to hear him say, but it wasn't this. And he's even more surprised, too, because Lupin said Voldemort. He said Lord Voldemort. Everyone else says he who must not be named, you know, but only Harry has only heard himself and Dumbledore say the name out loud. He hasn't heard anybody else say it out loud. But Lupin just said it here in front of him. So that's, like, interesting for Harry. He's like, okay, so there's some things about this guy. Like, he's not scared of the name, and he's not afraid to say it in front of me. Like, other people might try to, like, hide Voldemort stuff around him or whatever. Like, that's what some adults do with kids, right? But Lupin doesn't. He just straight up says Voldemort. And Lupin goes on to say that, like, I was wrong, though. But I didn't think that it'd be a good idea for Voldemort to just materialize in the staff room. I think people would have panicked. And Harry's honest with him and says, I did think of Voldemort at first, but then I remembered the Dementors and that night on the train. And so Lupin just kind of thinks for a minute and says that he's impressed. And he kind of smiles because Harry looks surprised. Like, why is Lupin impressed with me? And he says, that suggests that what you fear most of all is fear. Very wise, Harry. So Harry fears fear out of anything else. The Dementors are the ones who take away the happiness. And all those, they suck all the happiness out and make you feel miserable and horrible. That is what Dementors do. And Harry being the most frightened of them right now in this moment in time is saying that he fears fear most of all, fear itself. And so Harry doesn't really know what to say to that, so he just takes a sip of his tea. And Lupin is saying, like, you've just been thinking this whole time that I didn't think you were capable of fighting the Boggart. And Harry's like, well, yeah, I mean, and then he starts to say, like, he just feels happier after that. Like, he feels relieved that Lupin understands him, and it was like, I just didn't want it to be Voldemort to just, like, appear in Boggart form. So Harry starts to talk to Lupin about the Dementors, but all of a sudden there's a knock on the door, and it's Snape. He's carrying a goblet, and he's, you know, his face looks just as upset as ever, and it's, the goblet is, like, kind of smoking faintly, and he just, like, looks at Harry. And then Lupin is friendly and like, oh, Severus, thank you very much. Could you just leave it here on the desk for me? And Snape just sets it down, looking between Harry and Lupin. He's like, what is going on here? What are they talking about? Like, Snape is just being suspicious and stuff. And so Lupin's like, well, I was just showing Harry my Grindelwald here. And Snape doesn't even look at it, at the Grindelwald in the cage. He's just like, fascinating. You should drink that directly, Lupin. And he tells him, I made an entire cauldron full if you need any more. And then Lupin tells him, thank you very much, and I'll probably take some again tomorrow. And so Snape says, yeah, no problem, but he just walks out of the room, like, not smiling. Of course, Snape doesn't smile at Harry in a nice way. And he has a look in his eye that Harry does not like. And it's basically, that look in Snape's eye is just, like, just hatred. Like, just hatred and bitterness and some pettiness too. It's just like a mixture of all of that, because Snape can't let go of childhood grudges, basically. And Lupin just, you know, he notices Harry eyeing the goblet, and he says that Professor Snape has very kindly concocted this potion for me. I've never been much of a potion brewer, and this one is pretty complex. And he's like, well, it's a shame that sugar makes it useless, because it tastes terrible. And so Harry starts to say, like, why? Like, I don't know what he was going to ask him. Like, why are you drinking that? Or what is it? Why has he made that for you, that particular potion for you? Because Harry doesn't know what it is. And I'm going to tell you what it is. It is Wolfsbane. Wolfsbane is a potion invented for werewolves. So wizards can drink this potion on the night, the day of a full moon, and, like, the days after it, to help them feel a little bit better. Basically, like, after the transformation. But the full moon hits and they turn into werewolves. And without the potion, they will go wreak havoc everywhere and be trying to bite everybody, and very dangerous and deadly. But with the potion, the Wolfsbane potion, they can drink it And basically what Lupin does, he still transforms into a werewolf, but he's not a murderous werewolf. Literally all he does is he just takes the potion, transforms into a werewolf, and he just like sits underneath his desk. But he's not hit with any urge to go bite people and be murderous and dangerous and scary and everything. It's just a very calming potion where they can transform comfortably without being a danger to themselves or others. Very, very, very great invention. And it's also one of the most complex potions, and Snape, being a amazing potion master, is obviously the one at Hogwarts to do it. You know, he's the one that should be doing it, and he does. Much to his annoyance, he doesn't want to, but Dumbledore, like, you know, it's like, hey Snape, you're gonna make this for him, and he does. But he doesn't want to, but he also knows, Dumbledore knows, Lupin knows that Snape is way too smart and way too good at potions to mess up this Wolfsbane, and he's not going to do that. But it is a very complex and difficult potion to brew, so I'm going to talk very briefly about it because it'll come up later on. So Wolfsbane / Monkshood, it is a real plant, and it's pretty toxic. It's found in the UK. It will slow your heart rate. It could slow it down to like a fatal rhythm. And even just eating like a little bit can like hurt your stomach. Like Wolfsbane can kill you. And all monkshood, that's the plant, like they're all poisonous. And like the roots, the seeds, the flowers, like all of it's poisonous. And basically like American Association for Clinical Chemistry, when I was researching Wolfsbane for this episode, they were saying that like in the past wolves and criminals were poisoned with an extract from this, and that like the Ancotium lyocotinum, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but Ancotium lyocotinum, that's basically like lycanthropy, like the werewolf, like all those root words and everything, is where it comes from. So very dangerous for humans, animals, everything. And Wolfsbane was mentioned in the very first book in Sorcerer's Stone. Snape is talking to his first year potions class, and he's telling them like all these words and stuff. And basically he asks Harry what the difference between monkshood and Wolfsbane is. And he doesn't know. So then at the end, he says they're the same plant, which also goes by the name of aconite. And then he gets mad that no one is copying this down. But that's just a little bit of information about Wolfsbane. So back to how Lupin was saying that he's never been really much of a potion brewer. Lily, Harry's mom, was a really good potion brewer. In fact, the next potions teacher, so in their sixth year, Professor Slughorn, he comes out of retirement to be the potions teacher, while Snape goes to Defense Against the Dark Arts. And Slughorn tells Harry that his mom was one of his favorite students, and she was a great potion brewer. So I could totally imagine, like my headcanon, in the days of the Marauders, so Lupin and Sirius and Harry's dad James and Peter being at Hogwarts with Harry's mom Lily, I could totally imagine Lily like helping Lupin out, because she was kind to Lupin, she was kind to everyone. So I can imagine her helping out whoever needed help in potions, like the Nevilles of potions. Not to say that Lupin was like a Neville, like Hermione helping Neville, but I don't think Lupin was that helpless. But I'm sure that Lily was really great, and she could have helped like Lupin out a little bit during class if he needed it. So again, like Lupin said, that he's been feeling a bit off color, so he's lucky to be working alongside Professor Snape, because there aren't many wizards who are up to making this particular potion. So Lupin takes another sip out of the goblet, and Harry has this crazy urge to knock the goblet out of his hands. Like, he thinks that Snape would poison Lupin, intentionally or not. Like, more intentionally is what Harry's thinking, but Dumbledore would not allow that, and Snape knows he can't do that, but that's kind of what Harry's mind is going to, like, that Snape would poison Lupin. So Harry just has a crazy urge to knock the goblet out of his hands, but instead he just blurts out, Professor Snape's very interested in the dark arts. Like, that's just what Harry says, just blurts it out. And Lupin just says, really? Like, he doesn't seem very interested. But Lupin already knows. He's not going to reveal that to Harry, but Lupin already knows. He was at school with Snape. They're the same age at Hogwarts. He's very aware that Snape was very interested in the dark arts. He probably knows about Snape wanting his Defense Against the Dark Arts position. He thinks he could probably teach it so much better. Like, Lupin knows this stuff. Lupin knows that Snape was a Death Eater, so Lupin already knows. You don't have to tell him, Harry, but he can't just have this conversation with Harry right now, so he's like, oh, really? So Harry continues, just recklessly. He says, some people reckon, like, he hesitates, and then he's like, okay, I'm gonna say it. Some people reckon he'd do anything to get Defense Against the Dark Arts job. And Lupin just finishes drinking the potion from the goblet, says, okay, Harry, I'd better get back to work. I'll see you later at the feast. And Harry's like, okay, yeah. And so Harry just sets down his teacup, and he notices that the goblet is still smoking when he leaves. So later on that night, Ron and Hermione bring back a bunch of brilliantly colored sweets. They're just all these, like, shiny, delicious-looking candies, right? And they carry... So Ron says that they brought all that they could carry. So I'm surprised, like, did they bring a bag? Like, they had to have brought, like, a bag, and Hermione, like, a purse or wallet of some sort. But apparently, whatever they could fit into the bag or they were carrying. So one of the things they had that they brought Harry is a tiny packet of black pepper imps. And he asked him about Hogsmeade, like, where did you go? And it sounds like they went everywhere. They went to Dervish and Bings. That's like the wizarding equipment shop. They went to Zonko's. That's the joke shop. They went to the Three Broomsticks. That's the bar. They got foaming mugs of hot butterbeer, and they went to other places like the post office where there's like 200 owls. They're all color-coded depending on how fast you want your letter to get there. So that's interesting. And they keep, like, just shouting out random things that they saw. So, for instance, Honeydukes, they had a new kind of fudge, and they were giving out free samples. So there's, like, some that they brought back for Harry. They were saying in the Three Broomsticks that they wish they could have brought him back some butterbeer because it really, like, warms you up, that hot butterbeer. And he's saying that they think they saw an ogre in the Three Broomsticks. Like, you never know. They get all sorts of these creatures and people and things and everything in there. And so Hermione's like, well, what did you do? Did you get any work done? And Harry's like, nope. Lupin just made me a cup of tea in his office. And then he tells them that Snape came in, and he tells them all about the goblet. And Ron is shocked. He's like, and he drank it? Like, is he mad? Because Ron is thinking the same thing as Harry. Like, why would he drink that? About how he's trying to poison Lupin. And so Hermione looks at the time. She's like, we got to go head down to the feast that starts in 5 minutes. And they still are discussing Snape as they go through the portrait hole and down to the Great Hall. And Hermione's like, of course, lowering her voice. Like, they're not, like, shouting right now. They're speaking very quietly. She's looking around. She's like, if he was trying to poison Lupin, he wouldn't have done it in front of Harry. Harry's like, okay, yeah, maybe. Then they get to the Great Hall, and we get a little description of what it's decorated like for Halloween, for the Halloween feast. And it's decorated with hundreds and hundreds of candle-filled pumpkins, a cloud of fluttering live bats, and many flaming orange streamers, which were swimming lazily across the stormy ceiling like brilliant water snakes. And I just think that's just the prettiest description. Love Halloween, the decorations, and magical decorations in the Great Hall just are probably so, so cool. I love the description. And the food is absolutely delicious. Even Ron and Hermione and, like, other Hogsmeade students, like the other students that went to Hogsmeade that afternoon, even though they had all of these Honeyduke sweets, they managed to get second helpings of everything. And Harry just keeps looking up at the staff table. He's concerned for Lupin. Like, he's concerned because Snape might have tried to poison him. He wouldn't, Harry, but that's what he's concerned about. But he's looking at the table, and Lupin just looks cheerful, like, He's looking happy, he's eating, like, he looks completely fine. He keeps talking to Professor Flitwick, who's the charms teacher. And Harry looks to where Snape is at, and he's like, he doesn't know if he's imagining it, but he believes that Snape is, like, his eyes are flickering towards Lupin more often than usual. So they all continue eating, and at the end of the feast, the Hogwarts ghosts provide a little bit of Halloween entertainment, which is so cool. Again, Halloween ghosts, like, oh my gosh, I would love to be at Hogwarts anytime, but Halloween especially would be so cool. And they're, like, coming out of the walls and tables to do, like, what's called formation gliding. And Nearly Headless Nick, who's the Gryffindor ghost, he ends up doing a reenactment of how he died, his botched beheading. He's nearly headless because he wasn't completely beheaded. Like, his neck is still hanging on by, like, a little bit of skin and whatever, tendons, ligaments, whatever it is holding his neck there. And The feast finishes, like, it's such a pleasant evening, not even Malfoy could spoil it, because he's even shouting through the hall, like, the Dementors send their love, Potter, like, just being annoying, and Harry's not paying attention, because he had a good night, and he's like, I don't want to hear you, Malfoy, just ignoring him. So they get back to Gryffindor Tower, but it's, like, crowded, it's just jammed with students, and no one's going in. And they're a little bit confused, so they're, like, looking past them, and the portrait seems to be closed. And here comes Percy, because he's so important, right? He is head boy, like, you know, but he also is pompous and thinks he's more important and cool than he is. But he's telling the crowd to let him through, like, what's the holdup? Have you all forgotten the password? I'm head boy, let me through, like, all of this. And so suddenly there's silence. And there seems to be like a chill just spreads through the corridor of all the students there. So they hear Percy say, like, in a really sharp voice, somebody get Professor Dumbledore quick, like, quick, go get him. And people's heads all turn and everyone's like trying to see over the head, seeing what's going on. And Jenny just arrived and she's kind of there next to the tree and she's asking, like, what's going on. And next thing you know, Dumbledore is there. And the Gryffindors all let him through, and as he gets to the Gryffindors, the trio takes that as an opportunity to kind of, like, go behind him and go up to the front to see what's going on. And it's the fat lady. She has vanished from her portrait hole. So the portrait is slashed so viciously that strips of canvas littered the floor. Great chunks of it had been torn away completely. So it looks like a murder scene almost, like if portraits could die. Like, it's a scary sight. So Dumbledore takes one quick look at the painting. His expression is very serious. He turns to McGonagall, Lupin, and Snape, who are there, and he tells them we need to find her. He asks McGonagall to go to Mr. Filch and tell him to search every painting in the castle for the fat lady. And then they hear a cackling voice, and it is Peeves. And he tells them what happened. And he loves mischief and trouble, and he delights at the sight of, like, worry and wreckage. So he's excited. And he says, you'll be lucky to find her. But Dumbledore's there. And he asks Peeves very calmly, what do you mean, Peeves? And Peeves' grin, like, fades a little bit. Because, like, he wouldn't dare taunt Dumbledore. Like, he respects Dumbledore. Everybody does. Like, he's not going to mess with Dumbledore. So he says, ashamed, your headship, sir. I think it's funny he calls him that, headship. He's a headmaster, but Peeves says headship, and he says that the fat lady doesn't want to be seen. She's a horrible mess, and he saw her running through the landscape up on the fourth floor. She was, like, dodging everything in the pictures, the portraits. Like, she was dodging some trees because that's the portrait she was in, and she was crying something dreadful. And then very unconvincingly, he adds, poor thing. And Dumbledore, still calm, says, did she say who did it? And Peeves says, oh, yes, Professor Head. So we got headship and Professor Head. It's Professor Dumbledore or Headmaster, but he says headship, then he says Professor Head. So I just think it's funny. And Peeves says he got very angry when she wouldn't let him in, you see. And Peeves says, nasty temper he's got, that Sirius Black. So Sirius tried to get in to kill Peter, not Harry, but they think he tried to get in to kill Harry. And Sirius didn't help his image with the slashing, you know, that's a crime scene. He's not acting like an innocent man again. Like I said, the night that Harry's parents died, he was cackling. And it wasn't because he was mad. It was because he was so, like, shocked by his friend's death. So, again, here, though, he's not acting like an innocent man. And I almost wonder, too, like, could he have stayed a dog, maybe, and then followed students in? Maybe that might have worked better. It's like, maybe, maybe not. But also, it's like, either that, be a dog and have no one know who you are, and just somehow it's like, oh, maybe a stray dog wandered onto Hogwarts, even though, like, there are places, security measures in place at Hogwarts for that not to happen. But then look at this, Sirius Black entered as a dog. So clearly, like, why wouldn't any dog be able to enter, right? So it just makes me wonder, like, maybe that would have been a little bit easier for him. He wouldn't have gotten caught, and then he would have been able to maybe just go in with the students. Like, maybe some naive Gryffindors would have seen a dog and a dog follow them into the portrait hole. Like, I'm sure that maybe would have been fine. Dogs aren't really the pets that you can have at Hogwarts. It's the the owls, the cats, the rats, like the toads, that's kind of what's allowed. You don't really do dogs, but like, who knows, maybe someone would be like, oh, someone got special permission to have a dog as a pet, who knows. But that is just my thinking, like maybe he could have been a dog and it would have been easier, but you know, the plot has to progress, things have to happen. So that's what happened in this chapter, and that is where the chapter ends. Flight of the Fat Lady. Sirius Black wasn't going to kill Harry like they think. He was going to kill Scabbers. And he got mad because the fat lady did not let him in, so he was slashing it all angrily. Again, not acting like an innocent man. This chapter took place over the course of like a couple weeks, a few days, whereas the last chapter was just the like one day, that one day of school. And this one was like a few weeks, kind of showing how times are changing here at Hogwarts. And now we got a big event with Sirius Black where everyone is just gonna be in an uproar and like scared and everything. So interesting chapter. I like how we learned a little bit more about Lupin, like what's this potion that he's taking. We saw Ron and Hermione, like their friendship is gonna be tested this year for sure, and we saw some beginnings of that with the whole Scabbers and Crookshanks information, of course this big Sirius Black thing that happened. Like this was a big event, and even more is just going to happen as the book continues. So I'm so excited again to continue Prisoner of Azkaban. It's one of my favorites, it's so good. So next week, make sure you read chapter 9, which is Grim Defeat, and you can email me at theairsofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Twitter is @slytherinpod. Facebook page is theairsofslytherinpodcast. And this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And make sure you read Chapter 9 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban for next week's episode, Grim Defeat.
Thank you for listening to The Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Mikaela, your host.